The following message from Pastor Greg Laurie is made possible by some special friends of this ministry. Pastor Greg?
I wanted to say a special word of thanks to the Harvest Partners who make this ministry possible.
Next time you're online, check out Pastor Greg's personal blog at blog.greglaurie.com.
God goes out of his way to find ordinary people to do extraordinary things. Why? So he gets the glory.
We all want to do good things, but today Pastor Greg Laurie points out we can do God's things if we focus on bringing him glory.
The Lord in effect says, it's not about who you are, it's about who I am. So we say, who am I? God says, really nobody, but who am I? I'm the great I am, and I'm the one that's going to do the work through you.
This is the day when the lost are found.
Century novelist Charles Edward Montague said, "There is no limit to what a man can do, so long as he does not care a straw who gets the credit for it." And there's truth to that. And there's absolutely no limit to what a man can do when he's empowered by God and seeks only God's glory. Today on A New Beginning, Pastor Greg Laurie shows the example of a man who drew on God's strength and provision to accomplish an impossible feat. We'll see what the Lord wants us to learn from this account.
Let's grab our Bibles and turn to the book of Judges, chapter 6. Judges, chapter 6, and we're in our World Changer series, which is normally based in Hebrews 11 and still is to the point, but the character we're going to look at today, the World Changer we're going to spend a little time with, is only mentioned in a word in the Great Heroes Hall of Faith. So we're going to deal with a text that tells a story. And the title of my message is, What to Do When the Odds Are Against You. Does that sound like an interesting message? Are the odds against anybody right now? Are you facing some challenges, some difficulties, and it's not looking good for you? What to do when the odds are against you? And now we're going to look at a man that had no potential that we can see whatsoever, yet he became a bona fide world changer, and his name is Gideon. And Gideon, well, it's kind of surprising he made it into the Hall of Faith. This was not a perfect guy. He had a weak beginning, and quite frankly, he didn't have the best ending either, but he made it into this exclusive list of courageous men and women who put their faith into action. You know what I find interesting about Hebrews 11, the Heroes Hall of Faith, or what I call world changers, is God never mentions their sins. He tells us about their accomplishments done through faith, but he never mentions their flaws or their shortcomings, but other verses do. But in this particular record, those things are not mentioned. So when we look at a guy like Gideon, this gives hope to people who are not extraordinary, but more on the ordinary side. You weren't the best student. You weren't the class president. You weren't the most beautiful. You weren't the most handsome. You were that person that when they were picking who was going to be on what team to play baseball, you were one of the last ones picked. Was that anybody here? That was me. It was so sad. You know, there have a bunch of people. Okay, we'll take that person. We'll take that person. And at the end, it would be me and a three-legged dog, okay? And they would still pick the dog over me. Then finally, someone would say, all right, fine, we'll take Lori. Lori, you can be first base. I'm all excited. I can play first base. No, we want you to be first base. We want to put our cleats in you when we slide in. So, you know, I know what it's like to be that guy. But listen to this. God goes out of his way to find people like that. God goes out of his way to find ordinary people to do extraordinary things. Why? So he gets the glory, you see? Because that person will say, there's no way I could have ever done that on my own. And that is really the story here. People to change the world. And you know what? Gideon's world was messed up big time. Really, it was a horrible situation. The people were morally upside down, and that's because they're spiritually upside down. Whenever there's a spiritual breakdown, there's going to be a moral breakdown, and there's going to be a cultural breakdown. And the verse that sort of explains everything is Judges 17:6. It says, "In those days, Israel had no king, so the people did whatever seemed right in their own eyes." The people did whatever seemed right in their own eyes. Let me do a paraphrase. Everybody just did their own thing. Sort of like, well, today, where someone will say, well, you know what? I don't believe in your truth. That's your truth. I have my own truth, and I'll do what I want to do, and I'll live by the dictates of my conscience because my God would never tell me to do thus and so, etc. They just sort of make it up as they go. So things were in chaos, not unlike the Wild West. And so the Lord raised up judges to rule over Israel, 13 in total. 12 of them were men, one of them was a woman. By the way, when we think of judges, don't think of like Supreme Court judges running around in robes. These were more like lawmen of the Old West. Think of Wyatt Earp showing up in town to try to bring some law and order. So God raised up these judges who were, in many cases, warriors as well. So we're sort of picking this story up chronologically as we look at the world changers, and Joshua has passed from the scene. Remember, God raised up Moses to deliver Israel out of Egypt and lead them through the wilderness to the brink of the promised land. God raised up Joshua to take them into the promised land. Now Joshua has died. And this just reminds us that God is looking for world changers for every generation. Moses was a world changer for his day. Joshua was a world changer for his day. And now we need a new one. And so the Lord is going to pick out this guy, Gideon. And things were messed up because here's the problem. It was the year 1256 BC. It had been 200 years since Israel marched on Jericho. And though they saw the walls fall by the power of God of that great city, things had changed because they did not finish the job. God told Israel to drive out the inhabitants of Canaan, the Canaanites, which included the Amorites, the Hittites, the Ammonites, the Jebusites, the Perizzites, all the sites. God said, drive them out. And Israel obeyed partially. So now what has happened is these Canaanites have come back to haunt them and ultimately rule over them. And this happens to us as Christians sometimes. You know, we'll commit our life to Christ and we'll say, Lord, you can have the key to every door, to every lock in my life, except these two over here. Leave this closet alone. I keep my skeletons in this closet here. And I don't want you messing with this other area of my life. Lord, you know, you can have everything, but leave my finances alone. You can have everything, but leave my marriage alone, or leave my singleness alone, or leave my career alone. That's mine, Lord. No, no. If I don't let him be Lord of all, is he Lord at all? And so they had allowed the Canaanites to continue to grow and get stronger, and now they're going to come back to haunt them. Sort of like if you tried to cut down an old tree in your backyard, but you didn't uproot it, you just cut it off and left the stump. It's only a matter of time till it will sprout again. And so now these Canaanites have come back with a vengeance. And why did this happen? Because the Israelites had turned from God, and they turned to false gods. And we read in verse 1, Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and he handed them over to the Midianites. By the way, footnote, the Midianites are the first to domesticate the camel. If you ever spend time around a camel, they're a really weird-looking animal. One person said, a camel is a horse that a committee designed. You know, it's like, nothing makes sense about a camel. They're ugly, but they're incredibly efficient. They can go days without drinking water. They can move very quickly, and they spit. I know this from experience. Being over in Israel, there's like, you know, there's camels you can climb on the back of and pay a few shekels and get your shot taken, your photo taken. They don't charge you anything to get up on the camel, but they do charge you to get off, right? So you're up there and you, oh, nice camel, right in your face. Wah! So imagine you're the Israelites, and over the hill comes Midianites, armed to the teeth, riding camels. They look like creatures from Star Wars or something. It's frightening, and so they're dominating the people, and the people are hiding. They're afraid. They're devastated. And so they started calling on God, God help us. By the way, there's nothing wrong with calling out on the Lord if you're in a moment of crisis. Let me take it a step further. You're stupid if you don't call out on God in a moment of crisis. Well, I don't know. Christianity's for weak people. It's a crutch. Oh, no, Christianity isn't a crutch. Christianity is a whole hospital, okay? You need God's help. And if you have half a brain, you'll call on him. And here's the good news. The Lord will hear you if you call on him when it's sunny and wonderful, or if it's stormy and horrible. He'll hear your prayer. He says in Jeremiah 33:3, God speaking, call to me and I'll answer you. I'll tell you great and hidden things you have not known. So the Lord's not going to answer their prayer in a very unusual way. He's going to send the answer through a guy named Gideon.
In a moment, we'll see, although the world may value confidence and self-assurance, God values those who are humble. And we'll see Gideon qualified. That's next.
Hearing about listeners whose lives have been changed because of the radio ministry of A New Beginning is so encouraging.
A New Beginning. What a perfect name. Pastor Greg and staff, I'm a proud mother of two and a fairly new born-again Christian. I struggled with drug and alcohol addiction for many years, but have been sober for some time now. I thought I had become close to the Lord, but late last year, something happened to me, something I still, to this day, can't even put my finger on, except to say I was completely attacked by darkness. My world as I knew it seemed to turn upside down. I felt completely alone, and it felt like I had no one to turn to. Even now, just thinking about it, tears flow down my cheeks. In my absolute determination to stay out of my own head and the negative thoughts that seemed to be flooding it, I turned on the radio and began listening to your program. It was as if the Lord was speaking directly to me through you. Your words were quenching a thirst I didn't even know I had. Sermon by sermon, I began to feel God's undying love for me. I really believe that you all played a huge role in saving my life and bringing me closer than I ever could have imagined to the Lord. I want to say thank you with all of my heart. I feel like you all are my family, and I will forever have a place in my heart, in my mind, and on my radio.
How have these daily studies in God's Word encouraged you? Why not drop Pastor Greg an email and let him know? Send it to greg@harvest.org. Do it today while you're thinking about it. Again, that's greg@harvest.org.
Well, we're in Pastor Greg's World Changer series, and today we're learning from a world changer named Gideon in the message titled, What to Do When the Odds Are Against You.
As our story begins, we find Gideon trying to prepare a little bit of wheat, hiding behind the walls of a small wine press. Hardly a picture of heroism and courage. He was like the rest of Israel, hungry, hurting, and humiliated. And the Lord said, there's my man. So the story begins. Judges 6, look at verse 12. And the angel of the Lord appeared and said, I'm reading from the New Living Translation. Hey, mighty hero, the Lord is with you. Gideon said to him, oh, my Lord, if the Lord is with us, and why have all these things happened to us? And where are all of his miracles, which our fathers told us about, saying, did not the Lord bring us out of Egypt? And now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. And then the Lord turned to him and said, go in this might of yours, and you will save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you? We'll stop there. Interesting response on the part of Gideon. He complains. Here is the Lord coming to him, and he says, hey, why has all of this happened to us? You know, where's all the miracles that we hear about in the old days? I heard about a mom that was teaching some Bible stories to her children, actually to her daughter in particular, and she told her daughter about the great battles of Joshua and the story of Daniel in the lion's den. And the little girl turned to her mom and said, you know what, Mom? God was a lot more exciting back then. Maybe you feel that way sometimes. You hear about the stories of things that have happened in other generations. And God could have rebuked Gideon. God could have said, what are you talking about, Gideon? You brought this on yourself, you and your people with your idolatry. But yet the Lord did not do that. Effectively said, look, we got a job to do. Let's get going. Sort of like when you're trying to leave your house and get your kids ready and a shoe's missing and you're searching for a doll. Sadly, it's the dad looking for his doll. You know, you're looking, oh, we got to go. You say, kids, just get in the car. We'll sort it out later. We've got to, yeah, but mom, just get in the car, okay? And the Lord is saying that to Gideon. Look, I don't have time to deal with your whining and your lame questions. It's going to happen, and it's going to happen right now. So let's get going. Now, Gideon immediately protests, verse 15. Lord, how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I'm the least of my father's house. Modern interpretation of that would be, hey, I'm the runt of the litter. I'm the lowest of the low. And God said, yeah, and you're the guy I want. That brings us to point number one, if you're taking notes. Number one, God uses people who are humble. God uses people who are humble. By the way, if you talk about how humble you are, you're a long ways away from real humility. I've met people, I say, I'm a very humble person. I'm so humble. In fact, I'm humble. They're like, humble. I'm so humble, I dropped the H. I'm just humble. You're actually probably really arrogant because you're always talking about how humble you are. See, a humble person, a really humble person, doesn't tell you they're humble. They're just shocked that you would even notice them. They would be surprised if God would call upon them. That was Gideon. He was genuinely humble. It's someone who sees himself for who they are. In fact, Gideon asks the Lord in verse 15, who am I? Who am I that you would call me? And I love the response of the Lord. The Lord, in effect, says, it's not about who you are. It's about who I am. So we say, who am I? God says, really nobody. But who am I? I'm the great I am. And I'm the one that's going to do the work through you. So let's get going. I love how he's greeted initially. Verse 12, mighty hero, the Lord is with you. What kind of thing is that to say to a guy who's hiding? I mean, picture it. Here comes the angel of the Lord. Hey, mighty hero, the Lord's with you. Gideon's probably like, is there another mighty hero in here? Because you can't be talking to me. That would be like going to a kid who can't throw a football right and saying, hey, Tom Brady, how's it going? Or a little girl that's failing a math class. Hey, Einstein, how are you doing? It's almost like a mockery to call him something like that. I don't think Gideon felt like a mighty hero. I think he probably felt more like a pathetic zero. But yet God reassures him that he is the one. But first there's going to be a test before he leads Israel into battle. And it's going to be a test in his own home. God told Gideon to tear down the altar his father, Joash, had erected to a false god. He said, go tear that altar down. And by the way, while you're doing it, I want you to take his prized bull and I want you to barbecue it just so he understands what's coming down. And Gideon did what the Lord told him to do. And that was not easy. Bringing us to principle number two, world changers are faithful in little things. God says, go tear down the altar of your father. And Gideon did it. And by the way, the Bible says he did it at night. Some would be critical of him. Oh, he shouldn't have done it at night. He should have done it in the light of day. Yeah, so what? He did it. You know, there are people today that love to criticize. They think they have the gift of criticism. They always find what's wrong. They never have solutions. They never want to be a part of the solution. They just like to critique. Well, I don't like the way you guys do this. And I don't like the way you guys do that. Greg, I don't like the way you do evangelism. We don't like your crusades. And we don't like the way you call people to Christ. You don't do it right. Okay, I'll ask you, how do you do it? Well, we don't do it. Oh, well, I like my way of doing it better than your way of not doing it. Okay? Now, I'm not saying everything I do is perfect. It isn't. But I'm doing the best I can do to reach people with the gospel. So my question is, what are these other people doing? It's easy to be an armchair quarterback, but world changers are willing to put it on the line. They're willing to take chances and take risks. And so he did what the Lord called him to do. Verse 27 says, he did it at night because he was afraid of the other members of his father's household and the people of the town. And you know what happened? After he tore down the altar of his dad, the people were so angry and they wanted to execute Gideon. Pretty harsh. But amazingly, and in an interesting little twist in the story, the father of Gideon, the guy who set up the altar to Baal, is the one who defends him. And the father says to the people, why are you defending Baal? Why do you argue his case? If Baal's really a god, let him defend himself and destroy the one who broke down his altar. See, I think deep down inside, dad was proud of his son. Joash was proud of Gideon. Wow, my boy is doing really well. In fact, it even seems like the faith of the father was rekindled. But this brings up an important point. The hardest people to reach are your own family. The first place you need to take a stand for your faith in Christ is with the members of your family, with your father, with your mother, with your husband, with your wife, with your son, your daughter, your extended family. See, I'm now a follower of Jesus Christ, but a lot of times they're skeptical because they've probably known you since you've been, you know, knee-high to a grasshopper. They're thinking, oh, what's this kid going to tell me? And so you need to just live it. Maybe we think they need a sermon every day. No, there's a point when the sermons are done. Just start living the sermon now and be a godly example. Listen, even Jesus, when he walked among us during his earthly ministry, did not reach his family. And by that, I mean, they didn't all believe in him. Can you imagine having Jesus as a sibling? And oh yes, Jesus had brothers and sisters. The Bible tells us this. And, imagine being compared to Jesus. You know, Mary might have got the kids together and said, now kids, come on, really? Can you not do your chores? Why can't you be more like your big brother Jesus? He does his chores. No one ever tells him to do them. He does them cheerfully. Look how he makes his bed every day. Look how obedient he is. Look at how respectful he is to myself and to Joseph. Kids, you need to be more like your brother Jesus. In fact, Joseph made these little wooden bracelets in his shop, the WWJD. Wear these. What would Jesus do? Mom, come on. Jesus is like perfect, Mom. He like never loses his temper. So you think, okay, perfect example. Everyone would believe. No, they didn't. They didn't believe until he was crucified and risen again from the dead. So the point is, make your stand in your home. So Gideon passed the first test with flying colors.
Well, there's a lot more to learn from our study of Gideon as Pastor Greg Laurie continues his message here on A New Beginning called What to Do When the Odds Are Against You. He'll have a final illustration for today in just a moment, and we'll pick up again on our next program. And you can get an instant replay of anything you missed today by going to our website, harvest.org. You can hear the study again and even download a permanent copy if you'd like. Or listen by way of our Harvest mobile app. Or call us anytime 24 hours a day at 1-800-821-3300. That's 1-800-821-3300. And then we're so happy to make available a new resource for the holiday called The Jesus Storybook Bible, a Christmas collection by Sally Lloyd-Jones. In fact, she's here with Pastor Greg and me today, along with Pastor Greg's wife, Kathy. Kathy?
Sally, I think that when we speak to our children or tell our children Bible stories, we're so careful to not admit our own fears, our own shortcomings. And what I love about your stories is that you're very real and honest with children. You're not shielding them from some of the gentle realities that they need to begin to be talked to about, that there are things that go wrong, that there are times when we are afraid. How do you take those difficult times in a child's life and address them through your stories based on what the Bible has shown you?
I think that's so right. You don't hide the fact that sad things happen. And, you know, children right now will have experienced sad things happening, losing grandparents or who knows.
That's true.
So they know, and children know from a very early age that not everything is right with the world. And so unless we tell them the truth, they can't trust us. So I think that just to encourage that, obviously we have to say it in age-appropriate ways, But if we can process scary things with children while they're on our laps, then they can have their feelings while we're there in a safe place. And that will just prepare them and equip them. Because I think the main thing is when, yes, we protect children, but we also have to get them ready. So I think this year, perhaps the telling of the truth is, yes, everything is not all right with the world, but our headlines don't come from the news. They come from this story, which is the story underneath all the stories. And it's about the God who is still in charge, even though everything looks completely out of control. He's not, and he has a good plan. And I think it's just declaring the truth so that a child knows we're not sort of making it all easy and simplistic. We're telling them, yes, everything is out of control.
Wow. That's good.
The great insights from Sally Lloyd-Jones, everybody, who you're listening to right now. And she's a prolific author of children's books and most notably the Jesus Storybook Bible. And now the special book that we're offering called A Christmas Collection of Stories, Songs, and Reflections for the Advent Season, written in Sally's beautiful way. And narrated also by David Suchet, the outstanding actor, illustrated again by Jago, who she's worked with before, really has a great style as an artist. I really appreciate the graphic quality of this. And this is a beautiful book, hardcover book, with this button you push periodically, with interactive features with David Suchet's voice and a Christmas song and a lot here. And this is going to be a delightful, very helpful, a resource for you in the Christmas season to get your children or grandchildren focused on what Christmas really is all about, the most important of all stories. And so we want to send you a copy of this book for your gift of any size to help us continue on with our radio ministry that we call A New Beginning. Because as you know, we teach the Word of God every day and we give people an opportunity to come to Christ. So if that's important to you, if you believe more people need to hear the Bible taught and they need to hear the gospel so they can believe in Jesus, then we appreciate whatever you can send to our ministry. And really, I will send this to you for your gift of any size. You'd frankly pay quite a bit of money for this if you were to order it online or buy it in a store. And some of you can give a little more, and maybe some of you not give as much, but give what you can, and we'll rush you your copy of the Jesus Storybook Bible Christmas Collection.
Yeah, that's right. And you can contact us right away at 1-800-821-3300. We're here around the clock to take your call at 1-800-821-3300. Or send a note to A New Beginning, Box 4000, Riverside, California, 92514. Or just go online to harvest.org and look for the Jesus Storybook Bible, A Christmas Collection. Well, next time, Pastor Greg has more insight from the humble man of God named Gideon. But before we go for today, he has a final illustration to share.
Years ago, when I was a brand new Christian, I was attending Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa. So I made an appointment with Pastor Chuck Smith, who's now with the Lord. And I sat down in his office, and he was there behind his desk. And I said, Pastor Chuck, I want to be used by God. I want to serve the Lord here. And I thought he might say, well, Greg, why don't you do one of the Bible studies here, or maybe preach for me Sunday morning? And Chuck said, okay, great. I want you to go talk to one of my associate pastors. His name is Pastor Romaine. Well, I didn't know who Pastor Romaine was. I found out fast enough. He used to be in the Marine Corps. He was a drill sergeant. And here I come, some young hippie kid. And I said, hi, I'm here to serve the Lord. And Chuck sent me to you. And Romaine knew exactly what that meant. That meant free janitorial work. So I said, okay, Greg, here's a broom. Go sweep over there. And when you're done, go over there and clean the toilets. Excuse me. I didn't volunteer to be a janitor. I volunteered to serve the Lord. But they understood if I could not be faithful in the little things, how could they entrust me with anything greater? And they got a lot of free work out of me, by the way, doing that. But I understood I just need to do what I'm asked to do. And then I would be given another responsibility. And then maybe I could answer the phone and counsel someone. Then maybe I could go make a hospital call. And then maybe I could go teach a little Bible study. Jesus said in Luke 16, unless you're faithful in small matters, you won't be faithful in large ones. If you cheat even a little, you won't be honest with greater responsibility. So you start small.
The day when life begins. The preceding message from Greg Laurie was made possible by Harvest Partners, helping people everywhere know God. Sign up for Pastor Greg's free daily email devotions at harvest.org.